It's great to see each and every one here tonight, especially our visitors. We had expected some mothers from the Yukon congregation said they were coming, but it looks like they didn't make it. We are thankful for all of you who came to be with us from Newcastle and all others from the community. We have some here from the community too. We're very thankful for each and every one of you. We're studying tonight the subject of making marriage succeed. And, of course, it's a very difficult subject. A lot of things that need to be said. A lot of things that need to be considered in order to make marriage successful. But we're really sort of zeroing in on one of those things tonight. Marriage is a very serious thing. It may be one of the most, or perhaps the most serious decision that you will ever make, young people, outside of your decision perhaps to obey the gospel, to become a Christian. And yet some people seem to have no idea of what's necessary to make marriage work. One minister's wife, and I don't know where this minister preached that he could afford a maid for his wife. But I guess I had that privilege or opportunity when I was in Africa for a few years. But anyway, there was a shortage of maids. And so the minister's wife advertised for a manservant to come and do the same work. So the next morning, a nicely dressed young man came to the front door. And when the minister saw him, he immediately greeted him and began to question him and says, "Can you start breakfast by 7 o'clock each morning?" He says, "Well, I guess so," the young man said. He says, "Can you polish all the silver and wash all the dishes and do the laundry, take care of the lawn, wash the windows, iron clothes, and keep the house neat and tidy? Can you do all of that?" And the fellow looked a little bit puzzled, and he says, "Well, I guess I can, preacher, but I tell you," he says, "I just came here to see about getting you to perform a marriage ceremony, but," he says, "if it's going to take that much work to get married, I'm not sure I want to get married anymore." Well, some people, of course, don't have any idea what is involved and find out there is a lot more of that type of thing involved when they get married than what they realize. Henry Ford is supposed to have had some idea about what it took to make a successful marriage on the 50th wedding anniversary of he and his wife. Someone, a newspaper reporter, asked him to what he attributed the success of his marriage. And he answered, he says, "It's the same formula used in making business successful and by manufacturing of automobiles." And he says, "You just need to stick to one model." And of course, that has a great deal of truth in it also, doesn't it? But you know, you never know how some people think of marriage. Some people have some funny ideas about what's involved in marriage. A Sunday school teacher was showing pictures to her class, asking them to quote some Bible verse which seemed to be appropriate by the picture that was suggested. And first she showed them a picture of two children with their arms around each other. And one child raised his hand and offered the verse of "love one another." So the teacher said, "That's very good." And the next picture she showed was a little girl listening attentively to her mother. And another child correctly answered and said, "Well, that must be obey your parents in the Lord." And she said, "Well, that's great, you know." So she said, "I got one more." And she showed a picture then of two boys. Each one of them had a hold of the same cat at opposite ends of the cat. And they were pulling on the cat. And there wasn't any answer for a while. And finally, one little boy, a little bit perplexed, he says, Well, it says, maybe that's what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. I'd like for us tonight to think a little bit about a person that you, in the scriptures, that you might not consider, might not think that you can learn anything from this man about what it takes to make marriage successful. What do you know about Samson? Probably all of you know that he was a very strong man, right? Perhaps he was one of the strongest men, or maybe the strongest man that ever lived. You might know that he was a judge in the nation of Israel before the time of the kings. Did you know that his birth was foretold by an angel of God, and that his mother had been barren until the time the angel foretold his birth? And you probably know that it was during his time that he led in the deliverance of the children of Israel from the Philistines. They were under Philistine rule at the time he was born. But did you know that he chose to marry an unbelieving, idol-worshipping, heathen woman? And it got him into all kinds of trouble. Yes, he threw off the yoke of the Philistines. I have just a few pictures here of overheads of some of the things that you probably remember about his life. One of the things you remember probably was that he killed a lion with his bare hands. He was so strong. His strength was in his hair, you'll remember. God told him that, the angel of God told his mother that he would be a Nazarite. His hair would not be cut from his birth. And that was the source of his strength. Perhaps you also remember that he killed 1,000 Philistines one time with a jawbone of a donkey, showing again his great strength. And yet, in spite of the fact that he came as an announcement from God to open a barren womb, he came to deliver his people from the Philistines' rule, yet he was captured by the Philistines, and his eyes were put out. They made him turn a huge big grindstone round and round to crush the wheat in the what we'd call a granary to a mill where the wheat was ground. And in his death, after his eyes had been pulled out, his eyes had been burned out, and his hair had grown strong, given him strength again, he pulled down the temple of their idol and killed himself along with more Philistines than he had ever killed in his life before that time. Samson then had a very troubled life in spite of the good things we can know about him. Why did he have such troubles? And why did he come to such bitter end? Well, the reason is because he made a terrible choice of a marriage partner. His trouble began, you might say, on his wedding day. Well, it was a week-long celebration, a celebration of 7 days. And Judges chapter 14 here, verses 1 through 4, will tell us about it here. And how things come to be. Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. And so he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I've seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me as a wife. Then his father and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all the people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. But his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Samson made several mistakes. The first mistake that he made, here, back it up, Sam. We see in verse number 1 there, where it says that he went down to Timnah. He was down there, and there he was among the heathen people, looking at the daughters of the idol worshipers. What was he doing down there? His parents wanted to know why that there wasn't a wife among their people, among God's people, that would please him. Well, he had been down looking at the heathen idol-worshipping women. And notice it says he went down. Now I'm making a play up on that, because anytime God's people go looking for a mate among unbelievers, they truly go down. Samson did. The second mistake that he made was that he didn't listen to his mother and his father. In verse number 3, isn't there any woman among God's people? Is what he's saying. Did you have to go and find a wife among the uncircumcised Philistines? He should have listened to them. Very important lesson that young people need to learn is that their parents have lived longer than they have and probably made a whole lot more mistakes than they've ever thought about making, and know of mistakes that other people have made in regards to marriage. And when it comes to marriage, young people better listen to their parents. But the third mistake that he made was that he says here, "For she pleases me well." The Hebrew here actually says something to the effect that she pleases me, in my sight. She's right in my eyes. He only considered what pleased him. Maybe it was her physical attractiveness. But the truth of the matter is he didn't consider what pleased God. He didn't consider what pleased his parents. God, who knew all things, and the parents who could have guided him with wise wisdom, he wasn't concerned about what pleased them. She said, "She pleases me well." This next verse here from Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 2 through 4, makes it plain that it was not God's will that he should have married from among the Philistine people. This is from Deuteronomy chapter 7, whenever God was giving instructions for them as they entered into the promised land. He says, "When the Lord your God delivers them," talking about the heathen nations of that land, "when God delivers them over to you, and you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them, you shall make no covenants with them, nor show mercy to them, nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their sons, nor take their daughter for your son." That's what Samson and his parents did, wasn't it? Something God said not to do. "For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be roused against you and destroy you suddenly." But Samson didn't pay any attention to what God willed. His concern was that this woman pleased him. Now, there was a phrase in the verse number 4 of that passage which said that this was of the Lord. Some might have thought that God had ordained this marriage. God didn't approve of that marriage. Otherwise, he's contradicting this passage here, instructions he had already given. What that passage is saying is that God was using this obstinate, determined nature of Samson to take an unbelieving wife to accomplish his purpose. That was the overthrow of the Philistines. God was using Samson and his own fulfilling of his own desires and wishes here as a means to accomplish his purpose. God has in many cases used wicked men to accomplish his purposes. And here was a man by the name of Samson that his motives was not right and what he was doing was not right, but God used it for his purpose to overthrow the Philistines. Well, Samson's wife-to-be proved lacking in the qualities of a good marriage mate. And during the 7 days of the feast, which we have already mentioned here, Samson proposed a riddle. We should have a picture for this here, Sam. Proposed a riddle to 30, these were 30, we can't really call them friends. They were Philistine associates that were given to him to help him celebrate at the feast here, of the wedding feast, which lasted 7 days. And so he gave them this riddle and said, if you can answer it before the 7 days are up, then I'll supply you with 30 changes of garment, of clothing. If you can't, then you will supply me with 30 changes of clothing. Well, we see here that they couldn't come up with the answer. So what do? They go to the woman that's to be his marriage partner, and they threaten her that she's to get them the answer for the riddle. And so what does she do? Well, she goes weeping to Samson, saying, tell me the riddle. She says, I want to know, you know. She's, you know, whispering those sweet nothings in his ear. You know, you wouldn't withhold anything from me, would you? You know, you want to tell me all that's in your heart. And he wouldn't tell it. Well, you know, she comes out from another angle, you know. Well, you just hate me. You don't trust me with anything, do you, Samson? You don't love me. If you loved me, you would tell me this. You know, sometimes we're good at playing those type of games. You know, have you ever played that type of game there? If you really loved me now, this is what you'd do. Well, finally, he tells her the answer to the riddle. And what does she do but run directly to the 30 Philistine men that he has the bet with and tells them the answer to the riddle? And he has to go out then and find 30 other Philistine men to relieve them of their clothing, shall we say, and supply what he had bet to those 30. And in the meantime, of course, he lost his wife-to-be. She was given to maybe what we might think of as the best man by her father. And when he comes back, her father says, well, I've already given her to somebody else in marriage. Well, this caused all kinds of problems, which is not what we're here to study tonight. But, you know, this woman lacked the qualities of a good marriage partner. I don't know, she might have been the most beautiful thing in all of the land. Man, she might have been charming and lovely and just turned Samson on like he lit up like a Christmas tree. I don't know. But I do know that no matter how beautiful or charming or intelligent she was, she was not committed to that marriage. She was not committed to Samson. She was not committed to being faithful to him. She didn't consider loyalty to this one that she was going to marry. And she didn't have compatible goals for life like Samson. Her goals were looking out for herself and for her people, not for her husband or her husband-to-be. And they were going down completely two different roads. Well, Samson gets into trouble even later on. Now turn to chapter 16 here in verses 4 through 6. And we read that later on he gets involved with another woman. Also would appear to be a Philistine woman. And we read about this, that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. You've heard about Delilah, Samson and Delilah. It doesn't say that they were married in this passage, but the lords of the Philistines came to her. Now, the Philistines were being beaten down by Samson. They were losing their hold over the nation of Israel because of Samson and his strength and his leadership of God's people. And so they didn't know what to do about it. So they come and they say to her, entice him and find out where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him.
And every one of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Now, no wife would sell her husband a thing like that for money, would they? So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me where your great strength lies and with what you may be bound to afflict you." Again, this woman fails to prove herself a worthy marriage partner. Why do you reckon Samson goes after these Philistine women, these unbelievers, rather than the people of God? What do you think he saw so attractive about them? Well, maybe they were from the ruling class of people, and wealthy, higher prestige, and better off financially. Maybe they didn't have to do as much hard work as God's people did. And their skin was soft, and they could afford to buy this sweet-smelling perfume, you know. And Samson walked by, you know, smelled one of them as they went by, you know. And maybe they could afford to have their hair done up and nice curls and could afford expensive jewelry to put on their ankles and their hands and fingers and around their neck. And maybe they were wise in the way of the world so that they knew how to appeal to a man's sensual nature. I don't know. But something about these women seemed to appeal to him, where that the daughters of God's people, who were really in slavery to the Philistines, perhaps had to work hard in the fields and maybe had calluses on their hands, and maybe they didn't smell so pretty and were not able to afford to look so pretty. I don't know. I read about a young lady who was engaged to an elderly man who was 20 years her senior. And she was saying to her friend, says, "Jasper's just a wonderful fellow. I know I'm going to be very happy with him." The other one says, "But he's so much older than you are, you just won't enjoy the same things." She says, "Well, that's not really important. I just love Jasper for what he is, president of his own bank." Well, maybe that's the way Samson looked at these Philistine women. I don't know, but that's hardly a reason for picking someone as a marriage partner, is it? Well, Delilah lacks the same loyalty as the first woman that Samson was involved with. She lacks commitment to Samson and to the marriage, and again, she's only interested in what's good for her. And she tries to find out the source of his strength. And remember, she asked here what he could bind her with. We'll put up our next picture there, I think, Sam, if I've got them right here. And this is the Philistine kings coming to her and asking her how they may overpower him, and they're going to give her 1,100 pieces of silver if you do. Put up the next one there. And so she goes to Samson and asks him, and he tells her, he mocks her really, and tells her that she must bind him with 7 bowstrings. And if he binds him with 7 bowstrings while he's asleep, she binds him. And then she wakes him and says, "The Philistines are upon you." Now, this is a real loyal, supportive wife, isn't it? Just the type of lady you want to marry there, Brian, right? And so wakes him up, and he jumps up and he breaks loose the bowstrings. And of course she says, "Oh, you lied to me. You know, you're just mocking me. You're making fun of me." Begins to carry on crying and so forth, and ask him, "Wow!" And he mocks her 2 more times, tells her new rope, well, that won't work either. And tells her that if she'll weave his long hair, his locks, into the weaving loom, that, you know, that will take him his strength away. And of course, that doesn't work at all. He wakes up and breaks the weaving loom in pieces. But she keeps on day after day. You know, just like a dripping faucet, you know. crying to him and saying, if you loved me, you'd tell me, you know, why do you keep this from me? How can you claim that you love me and you not tell me all that's in your heart?
And finally, he makes a fatal mistake and tells her that it's his hair. She wore him down and bound him after cutting off his hair. And there we see the beautiful Delilah with her Philistine soldier come to take him away. It was an unfaithful, terrible choice marriage partner that did him in. You know, his life was in that woman's hand. And that's the way it is in all marriages, you know that? That marriage partner you choose is taking your life into his or her hands. They make so many decisions, they do so many things that, you know, we are in their care. That's a serious thing. This tells us we must marry someone completely loyal to us. Someone committed to our good, to the same goals and purposes that I and that you are committed to. Because if they're not committed to the same goals and purposes, then you'll probably end up like Samson and maybe lose more than your hair, because he did lose more than his hair, didn't he? Then let's turn to one other passage here. Let's illustrate this same point. Genesis chapter 6 and 1 through 3. We have a record of some things that happened before the flood. It came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful. And they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Now what he's telling them here is that he's saying it's going to be 120 years before I destroy the earth with the flood there. And I'll keep it up here for just a minute, Sam. Now, we want to notice here, it says the sons of God. Now, that's not talking about the angels, not talking about some heavenly beings or something. It's talking about a righteous, pious line of descendants that came from Seth, the son of Adam and Eve. And when it talks about the daughters of men, it's talking about, I believe, an evil, wicked line of people that were descendants from Cain. And so we see God's people looking over here. Whether that's what it is or not, it's plain to see it's God's people looking over here and seeing the daughters of men and deciding to marry those daughters of men. Why? Was it because they saw some wonderful qualities that they wanted for a marriage partner? No, it says they saw that they were beautiful. They saw their physical attractiveness. They saw the charm of their beauty. It was their sensual desires that attracted them to them, the lust of the eye, their beauty. Oh, it's important that a marriage partner be attractive to us. But that's not all that there is to it. And that seems to be the case here. And it says, they took them wives. They made the decision based upon the physical attractiveness and their lusts. And they married to please their own pleasures. Of all that who they chose, it says, they chose. Not what God chose for them. Not what godly parents necessarily would have had them to marry. But what God willed was not considered. It's what they wanted. They chose for themselves. What was the results of this? Well, the 120 years, God says, my spirit will not always strive with man. God's giving up on man, says, I'm going to destroy him. Right down here, we see the result. The Lord said the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every intent of the thought of his heart was only evil continual. Sorry that he made man. He decides to send the flood. Noah found grace in his eyes.
You see, when ungodly people marry, the likelihood is that there's going to be ungodly offspring. And when this happens in all families throughout the whole of the land, the whole world becomes ungodly. It may be happening in our own generation, our own country right now. As people become more and more ungodly and pick mates and marry simply for selfish reasons. These examples, I think, show to us how important it is to choose the right marriage partner. Cannot be overestimated. Many such modern day examples could be given. I bet if you ask your parents, young people, you ask your preachers and elders, they can give you many examples. Young people that choose the wrong marriage partner. Choose on the wrong basis. You see, physical attractiveness is not going to take us to heaven. It's not going to save our souls. And if we make the choice based upon what will fulfill our sensual interests, then danger lies ahead. I remember, I've been acquainted for a number of years with a lady who was the daughter of a missionary who actually lost his life in Africa. This lady, his daughter, attended a Christian university, Abilene, Texas. There she met a man from the same country in Africa where she had lived. He was handsome, he was intelligent, he was very witty. I knew him personally for several years. And he understood her and the customs which she had grown up in Africa. And coming from similar backgrounds in Africa made them quite compatible in many ways. And she married him. She married him in spite of the fact that she had known for years, and he was plain and open with her, that he was an atheist. But he promised he would not prevent her from coming to worship and from serving God. And he seemed to be honest, and I know he was very kind to her, to the two children that were born in this wedlock. He was very interested in young people. Especially he helped with the Boy Scouts and other type of youth organizations. His wife was very faithful in serving the Lord. And he even supported her and encouraged their children to worship and to serve God. When his son was about 8 or 9 years old, or even before that, he began to encourage young men. He was always have young men come to their home. And they'd sit down at their table and he would take them, do all sorts of things with them, camping, fishing, hunting, spend time with them. There were two young men who were members of the church. They were, I guess we can call them men. They were about 9 and 12 years old. Had spent a weekend at their home. And after that visit, they reported to their mother that they had been molested homosexually by this man. The wife had no idea, didn't realize it about him at all. None of us would have guessed it. The result, of course, was that it caused a great deal of problems within the church itself. There was the divorce within the home. The mother ended up raising those two children completely all alone. And now in her older age lives a lonely existence all alone because of the wrong marriage choice. You see, he was going in one direction and living for one purpose, and his goals were completely contrary to what hers were. Marriage to succeed must have two people going down the same road together. The first necessity of choosing a good marriage partner is to know who you are and where you are going and what you want out of life. There are too many marriages that are started based upon wrong choices. Many marry just to have someone to love them. Sometimes children grow up feeling unloved and unaccepted and starved for love. And the first old boy or the first young lady that comes along and shows any acceptance of them, they think they're in love and they want to get married. Anyway, I'm reminded of the lady who went to the preacher. The lady had never married. She was concerned, and she was told by the preacher, says, the Lord has a plan. It's one man for one woman, and you can't improve on the Lord's plan. Well, he says, I don't want to improve on the Lord's plan. I just want in on it. Well, a lot of people, that's their goal. A lot of times young people have very romantic concepts about marriage, and all they think about is to get in on God's plan, is to be married so that they'll have someone that will love them. And they think that that's going to guarantee them happiness in life if they can get married. It won't. The only thing that'll guarantee us happiness in life and a successful marriage is to know who we are and where we're going, and to find a marriage partner that's going the same direction. We must know what our goals are in life. One time Oliver Wendell Holmes boarded a train, they tell me, and the conductor come along to collect the tickets, and he was going through all his pockets trying to find his ticket, and he couldn't find it. And the conductor said, Mr. Holmes, says, we know who you are, we trust you, says, you just ride to your destination and you can mail us the ticket in then. And he says, well, says, that's not really the problem. Says, I need to find the ticket so I can know where I'm going. A lot of times, as young people, we don't know where we're going. Where are you going? What are you living for? We mustn't be like the girl who desired to be known in the society page, and she wanted to have and live in a big house with fancy, expensive furnishings and have big cars to drive and the finest of expensive clothing to wear. And she had a chance to date the football hero of her class and wanted to marry him because that would add to her image if she could marry the big football hero. But of course, the football hero was a Christian who wanted to serve God and who was willing to sacrifice in order to give his time and finances to the Lord. And his first goal was the building of God's kingdom and the salvation of souls. Could that marriage have worked? They weren't traveling the same road, were they? They weren't going in the same direction. You need to know who you are, where you're going, what do you want out of life? Marriage must be based on mutual commitments to the same goals in life. And if your partner is not committed to the same thing you are, then remember that was Samson's problem. That's why he ended up with his eyes gouged out and turning the grinding wheel, because his wife had a different purpose than what he had. And when it came down to the crunch, the wife stayed with her purpose and sacrificed Samson rather than to sacrifice her purposes. If your mate marries you because of physical or sensual attractiveness and reasons, then when he or she finds someone else that's more attractive, he or she's liable to trade you in for that one that he thinks is more attractive or has more physical beauty. Or whenever you get to be a little bit older like some of us and some of your beautiful, handsomely features begin to sag a little bit, you begin to get some wrinkles, he or she's liable to look for somebody that's a little bit more physically attractive and trade you in for a younger model. Marriage is serious business. I want the best possible life and marriage for each and every person here. But it starts with the selecting of the right marriage partner. The way to find that right marriage partner is to listen to God's word. Listen to wise parents that would guide us in the way that we should go. But know who you are and what you want and select a marriage partner along that same route. Want the best for you. Tonight, if you are subject to the invitation, we're going to extend it now at this time. Maybe you are out of Christ. Maybe you've not confessed the name of Christ or been baptized with him. If you need to obey the gospel, you need to become a Christian, won't you do it this night? Set your goal, your sights on heaven. Or if as a Christian you've turned your back and gone back, then will you not reset your sights on heaven and come back this night before it's too late? Will you not come while we stand, while we sing?